Robbie Suave. Christian Brichke, back from the dead or recast. We had Jason kind of portraying you last week, but...
Yeah, my generic second string stand-in. Not to get back into the ludicrous number of sports references from the last episode.
It was the sports episode. This will not be the sports episode. No. Where the hell were you?
What a strange journey it's been. So, as you know,
yes,
all your many efforts to... both get the federal government to pursue me and then your accidental efforts to do nice things for me, which have also resulted in...
hastening the day of reckoning.
Yes, yes. So I've been on the run and the heat's been getting so hot.
Ooh.
I was not able to make it into the studio last week,
the
unfortunately.
The fuzz is at hand.
Yep, I've been traveling in trunks and rolled up carpets to safe houses and remote mountain hideouts and whatever else, just trying to stay one step ahead of the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been having my mail forwarded to me.
Okay.
So, you know, I still want to keep up with my correspondence. And, I got, at the last place I was at, I won't disclose where it was. I got a offer. I won a sweepstakes that I didn't remember entering for a free boat.
Oh!
Yeah. And now I don't remember entering the sweepstakes. I have no need for a boat. But
I might have entered you.
Well, so that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know who needs a boat? Is my co-host Robbie Suave, so he can get back and forth to his island a little easier for all the parties he's hosting there, which, you know, hopefully one day I'll be invited to.
Yeah. You're a little old, but, you know.
I'm working on that eating disorder.
Okay,
so, you know.
Okay.
We
like to hear it.
But, yeah, so I'm like, well, you know, as a token of my appreciation for all the good work that we've done, I'm going to risk going out in public to go claim this boat. So I get to the building, and it turns out to be they're giving away the boat in an FBI building, which is a little awkward. Then I get into the room where allegedly my boat is. The room is empty. I turn to the left, no boat. I turn to the right, no boat. I look down, and who do I see but Kash Patel?
oh, no.
They got me.
They got me. They did get you.
And so they were about, the interrogation's about to start. They're bringing in the rubber hoses and the water for the waterboarding.
Mm-hmm.
And then... I guess what I hear outside. Oh no, the men's hockey game, U.S. Canada is about to start, and so everyone leaves. Kash Patel, he's out of there.
Oh yeah, he loves hockey.
And they forgot about little old me, and so I just walked out of the building.
Did you take the boat here? There was no boat.
Well, I crashed the boat.
I see.
No, that's right. There was no boat.
Was that you? They crashed that boat, or there was a boat that somebody took to Cuba.
Oh right,
that could have been you.
That could have been me.
Maybe that was you. Maybe you were doing something.
I mean,
no
I assume
good.
That was an FBI boat, right? Yeah, what a strange story that has been.
Yeah. Well, we don't have the whole story.
We literally have nothing but the Cuban government's story and the fact that this, we know a little bit about the guys.
If this was Bay of Pigs again,
it would
be really stupid.
But it's not even, it was like 10 guys, so it wouldn't even be Bay of Pigs. It would be like a inlet of pigs. pig puddle.
Inlet of piglets.
Okay, very good. Yeah, excellent.
Well, while you've been gone, however, you still managed to write a fantastic cover story.
Oh,
for
shit.
Reason.
No, we should have grabbed...
Damn it. Well, we'll show it on screen.
Oh, boom.
We'll insert a photo of it.
Right
and
here.
Maybe next to your face or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where you're looking at it right now, probably.
Hopefully.
It's some of the best art that we've ever had on the... We always have great art, but this is one of my favorite covers ever.
Yeah, it's done in the style of
Lisa Frank
who did like the pencil cases and notebook covers.
Trapper Keepers.
Mm-hmm,
remember that?
Yeah.
That good stuff. Do you have a nice big pencil case?
I did, although it wasn't a Lisa Frank one. I'm, you know...
Because you're not a gay little girl.
Yeah.
One year I did. I just wanted a bigger one because I had a lot of markers and the bigger one was purple.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. Purple pencil case.
The number of
I got bullied really bad that year.
The number of writing implements that we used to have to carry around as children, pens and pencils.
Well, and writing even though I was an artistically inclined little person, you've seen my art for Dungeons and Dragons. You've seen my Dungeons and Dragons art, which is, I draw mountains like little M's and squares for houses. I'm operating at the level of like a second grader.
It's service utilitarian.
It's utilitarian, but I loved you know
not
doing
that
my
it inspires
art.
Happiness in me and increases my utils, but go
on. I don't even remember what I was something about my art as a kid. Oh, but I'm left-handed, so
right.
Drawing writing you smear everything and it's a major source of disadvantage.
Yeah, I guess
You wouldn't, yeah. Try putting your hand on a spiral notebook. You're always like your wrist is always resting on the notebook.
Mm. You mean they have left-handed notebooks, right? But that doesn't solve the problem.
Well, really, the problem is we should write
right to
the
left.
Left-handed brethren. Yes, right to left, yeah. Which I can do quite easily. It's really? Natural to huh, the, to our brains. The way our brains are wired.
Just learned Arabic. Yeah.
Then I'd have to be waterboarded, I guess. speaking of things that require water,
yeah.
Data centers,
but not that much water.
Okay, because everybody is freaked out about this right now. I've talked to Amber on Free Media. She's freaked out about it.
Yeah.
It's left, right. New Republic had a story. You know, those communists. Like,
yeah.
Now this is how we're going to re-up the war on big tech. Because the war on mm-hmm. big tech has come down from its heyday because there was big, remember, there's big bipartisan. It was like, this is the new right-left populism to be mad about big tech. They're silencing conservatives, so we're going to join with the antitrust left to oppose this. Then the leaders of tech, two things happened. One, the leaders of tech companies stopped moderating conservative content or frankly any content whatsoever.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for that. two, we realized that a lot of the most annoying moderation was not freely chosen by the companies, but was pushed on them by
the government,
by
yeah.
the deep state.
Mm-hmm.
So that eased up conservative frustration with big tech. Leaders of big tech have become mostly Republican supporters, donors. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're jockeying for position, right? They're trying to convince Trump to be more favorable to this and that. And actually, the administration is very favorable to AI. So anyway, it's the bipartisan desire there died down. So the left wants to bring that back.
Right.
And there are these local concerns about data centers. And so that's the new front they're going to open up in a war to cause, I would say, more censorship of you and more unenjoyment of your life.
Yes.
Take it away.
Yeah. So I agree with that analysis. To add, two things going on, right? There is a phobia about AI and big tech, and I would add just kind of like people's own, which I share, like irritation with their own smartphone use or screen time or whatever,
yes.
right? Which creates, so when you hear the word data center or whatever, yeah. I think like a lot of times people think of their own irritation.
I got so mad with my husband being on his phone so much the other day that I just chucked it across the room.
Wow.
I might have been drinking. Continue.
Very good. And then on the flip side is local NIMBYs who whine and bitch about anything
yeah.
getting built
yeah.
anywhere, right?
That building is going to cast a shadow on my rose garden and I have to stop it and I hate it.
Exactly. But then
that's literally what they sound
yeah,
like.
Yeah, absolutely. But, it's going to cast a shadow. It's not casting enough shadows.
Right. Too much wind going the wrong. Honestly, I'm used to this complaint from, and then I promise, let you talk. It's not interrupting. University of Michigan, where I went to school mm-hmm. in Ann Arbor.
Oh, sure.
That's when
yeah.
I first mm-hmm. confronted the, you know, liberal, progressive, communist, Marxist,
yeah.
wealthy people who are also super conservative townie
yeah.
about the aesthetic of the streets, right? And like every time they wanted to build a new housing building to have more student housing to make it more affordable to live there,
yeah.
and we'd be like, well, we'll just have too much wind if you build that. Honestly, yeah, the arguments right, I heard yeah. about wind and light and shadow were so funny.
Oh man, I've got some more stories because this is my beat, right?
Yes.
The land use stuff. Yeah, it's all these the Stalinist HOA types, basically. Mm-hmm. These things that you could never imagine possibly giving a shit about, it
yeah.
dominate their lives
yes.
and interior concerns so
yes.
much. So those are the foot soldiers in this war against data centers. And because we live in a country with very heavily regulated land use, where those types of people have tremendous say in the process of approving mm-hmm. any sort of development.
Yes.
They are able to raise a stink about data centers, which are then capitalized on by people with more global concerns about what these things might do. And so into that mix floods all this false or misleading or exaggerated information about data centers' impacts, right? I mean, I think, you know, the water impacts were a big one for a while, but mm-hmm. this is complete nonsense. Data centers are they don't consume much water. They use some water for cooling the equipment. And then even if you dig into the estimates of like the water that they use, a lot of it includes water that is evaporated from reservoirs to power hydroelectric dams. So it's not even like, which would get evaporate anyway
yeah.
if the data centers weren't there, right?
We're double dipping.
Yeah, we're
it's
double
piss
dipping.
Piss water. We
yeah.
weren't using it anyway.
yeah. Vaporware. yeah. So it's like things like that. golf courses and almond farming consume far more water than data centers, right? And people do complain about, you know, those as wasteful uses of water sometimes. But, like, the idea that data centers are drinking the country dry is complete nonsense. Power also, generally, this is a bogus concern. Data centers do use gargantuan amounts of power. This much is true. They also moderate electricity prices because they are willing to pay to build out massive amounts of power infrastructure, right? So I didn't get into it too much in the piece, but, like, if anything, the concern right now for utilities is that they've overbuilt power infrastructure, assuming this huge demand from data centers, and maybe there'll be some sort of popping of a bubble of data centers, and many of the ones in the pipeline don't get built, power demand goes down, then you're kind of stuck with this infrastructure, right?
Because I definitely think, and this came up, Trump said something to this effect at the State of the Union, and I didn't quite understand what he was saying, and also I wasn't paying that much attention anymore because I was just excited about the hockey team getting awards, and it was a fun, this is rah-rah pro-America time, but he said something like, because the administration is very pro-AI, like the administration is at its most libertarian on tech and AI-related issues.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Which is good. He said something like, and I think this is what we would agree with, or what you're saying, like, if these massive, if these things need to be built, the people who are going to be advantaged by them or reliant on them, they should, right, pay for the cost of doing that to some degree.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
And they should pay for the extra, right.
But they do. They do already. Okay. And they are, right? Yeah. I mean, you look at a place like Virginia, you know, where there's, like, a huge amount of data centers. Something like 13% of the world's data center capacity is just in Northern Virginia, right? Right outside of D.C.
I feel smarter already.
Right, just consuming it via osmosis, like, you know, Neo in The Matrix. I know Kung Fu because I've been to Loudoun County, But Virginia's electricity prices are, you know, moderate by the country standards and have risen about on average with everyone else's. That's, you know, you don't see the spikes of – the electricity price spikes are not in places that have a lot of data centers. They're in places that have passed a bunch of green energy rules or whatever, right? So, like, you know, you can't burn natural gas or coal to, you know, power homes and whatever else. So, again, yeah, the electricity concerns, I think, are – well – We're building the generation capacity and the lines to service the data centers. The data centers are paying for them. The I think the long-term maybe risk for a consumer, which is this is not what you hear from data center critics, but, like, is a reasonable fear, is maybe we actually don't need all these data centers, or there's a slowdown in the market. A lot of them don't get built. And then the consumer, you know, residential consumers, now you're left, you have to service all this infrastructure that they built, right?
Should we be reasonably concerned about, are people getting eminent domained to build these things?
There is, so
that's something we don't like.
No, so we don't like eminent domain. The data centers themselves, I'm not aware of people actually, like, taking land to build the data center facility. Normally where eminent domain comes up is in context of the, like, power transmission lines, right? Someone's going to, you know, they want to, you need to build more transmission lines to service the new power that you needed to have generated, and they cut across someone's farm in order to do that. I don't like that. That's no good. But that's part of a generalized criticism. I mean, everything that requires power is then going to risk eminent domain. Right. So, like, do we want to reform eminent domain laws? Okay, sure. You know, sign me up, right? But to use that as a criticism of data centers specifically, I think is kind of unfair, right? In the same way that, like, to say that, you know, cars are the problem because we have to eminent domain land for highways or whatever. It's like, well, or you could just reform eminent domain laws, right? So there's that. What are the other concerns? What else do people whine and bitch about when it comes to data centers?
Well, I don't know. I think it's the water and electricity. And then there's just the general criticism of tech. Like, Bernie Sanders has called for a moratorium on all new data centers, which is, like, the craziest idea I've ever heard. Like, you just can't, like, don't build any more of these.
Yeah, and I feel like this is why, like, people...
He thinks that we have to wait for the technology. We have to... Regulators have to catch up to the technology. He's worried about labor laws, probably.
He's a central planner. And so the idea that technology would
emerge... And he's a workers first central planner.
Yes. The idea that technology would emerge first through the machinations of capitalists seeking a you know, trying to earn a buck and not planned by him specifically and his staff is anathema to him. And so that's why he wants to stop data centers. Because otherwise he kind of concedes... I believe we talked about this on a previous episode, and I mentioned it in my article. He kind of concedes many of the good things about data centers, right? He just frames them as a negative thing. Data centers are going to be fabulously profitable, right? Again, you know, the concern I was mentioning
These are all
about,
things he doesn't like.
yeah, right. He thinks that's bad. The concern I was mentioning about power is that maybe data centers won't be as profitable as people assume. He thinks they will be profitable. He doesn't like the fact that people are earning money from them. Or, they're going to cause a lot of job loss because we can do more tasks with fewer people. That sounds like data centers are powering pretty productive technology. Interesting. So all the things he doesn't like about data centers are things that are unambiguously good. I think it's just like a lot of this is we live in a specialized time of magical technologies and people don't really understand how they work or
what's
necessary to...
Which is very typical of technological innovation.
Right. But so someone, you know, you see a big boxy building, you know, a Walmart with no entrances, and you're like, why do we have to have that? You know, what's with these data centers, right? You know, and you don't realize that like you have that.
I like them newfangled computers.
Right. You realize that that building exists so that you don't have to have like 6 CDs to install on your computer in order to use Amazon. Right. You don't, you know, the Waymo that you will eventually take or that your driverless car will eventually, the technology that powers your driverless car that you'll own here eventually is powered by that data center that you complained about down the road. I mean, it's like the level of like economic significance and potential of data centers and the tech that they power is so remarkable. It makes the like compared to the impacts, like the local impacts that people are complaining about, like they're not loud. They don't produce fumes and emissions. Like, you know, some of them have like gas generators or whatever on site. But yeah, compared to like any other industrial use, compared to like any other office use, because they like not that many people work at data centers, right? So like there's not really like traffic concerns or like strain on local services, you know, roads or schools or anything like that. There aren't even really those concerns.
Right, because obviously if they were causing local, if they had massive, you know, dispersed benefits to the society, but were awful for people in their local community,
like an
you would understand
factory, right?
Why, yeah. right? You would understand why those people don't want that there. And
there would be some...
Thus you have to compensate them to the degree that they're willing to do it, or you gotta then go find some town that desperately needs what or is willing to trade away some land for whatever thing, increasing the tax base, or just some direct cash payment from the people who benefit from it, whatever it is. But this actually isn't really much of an issue.
No. So for people out there who maybe feel some anxiety about data centers, have heard some of these things about their power use, their water use, whatever. Just remember that there's 3 types of people that are spreading all this misinformation, right? There is the local NIMBYs who bitch about literally everything.
Right.
There's the global, like people who have this global concern about big tech, the socialists and the communists and the people who want to drag us back to the Stone Ages. And then there's a bunch of illiterate trolls who just scream pedo all the time.
Oh, yeah. God.
Somehow the data center is producing...
Epstein.
Yeah, is... creating AI pedophiles.
Pedo. Pedo. That's all my mentions lately for just pointing out really basic things about.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I wrote an article a while ago called The Zoning Theory of Everything, which is like, because we have so much regulation of land use, like any concern that you have about the world, you'll ultimately try to use land use laws to control. And that's what I see with the data center stuff, right? It's like, what is the connection between pedophilia and data centers? Directly, none. But then there's some intermediate concern about like, oh, they'll produce AI, you know, child abuse material. And then that'll get, you know, on and on. Right. It's like, oh, so there's the through line, right? And so therefore, we have to use the zoning laws to stop the data centers because that will stop the pedophiles, right? That's where we end up.
Well, speaking of the pedophiles.
You were telling me about your island. Yeah.
This Epstein stuff, which I know nobody wants to hear more from me on. I'm really...
You were doing the... What's the opposite of fan service?
What is... I'm making an anti-movie or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm doing anti-humor.
You're late...
I'm Joker 2. Yeah, Did you see the second one of those? Awful.
Yeah, you are late season Sopranos, where David Chase is like, why do people give a shit about the mob storylines?
Yeah, but I just can't help myself because everybody is wrong, and it's annoying. Like, okay, State of the Union. Ro Khanna. Ro Khanna is a Democrat who... had on Rising. I've interviewed him before. I appreciate that he is more accessible to media and to alternate media, and he's an interesting thinker. And I Don't have any particular animus for him. You know, he's kind of a Bernie Sanders left. He was with Bernie Sanders touring Silicon Valley last weekend and, you know, is worried about, he doesn't want a moratorium, but he's a little tech phobic in my view, despite representing Silicon Valley. I don't know. Maybe he plays both sides.
He has some odd libertarian tendencies. Unexpected libertarian tendencies.
He does.
Right?
He's very good on civil liberties and speech for the most part.
Yeah.
But this Epstein thing, and it's funny that certain libertarian people are very obsessed with the release of the files and continuing the story. Mm-hmm. I'll get into that in a minute, how I'm now coming to realize that this is going to be a disaster for all of our civil liberties having done this. Mm-hmm. But Ro Khanna, okay, both of them, Khanna and Massey, you know, obsessed with the idea that convinced me, until we didn't see any evidence for it, that there was a cabal of elite pedophiles. Mm-hmm. Ro Khanna and other Democrats brought Epstein survivors, alleged survivors, victims, to the State of the Union as their guests. The one that Ro Khanna brought, this woman named Haley Robeson, did a little bit of research on her. She is, I think, a legitimate victim of Epstein. I think she was, when she was underage, she had sexual contact with him. She also, by her own admission, was subsequently, after she was of the age of adulthood, so not as a minor, was paid by him to find girls to bring into Epstein's company.
Yeah.
And she instructed them, the girls she found, they were underage girls. She instructed them to lie and say that they were 18. If anyone can be credibly accused of sex trafficking, I mean, isn't it the person who is finding the underage girls and being paid to get them to Epstein? Again, this is not sex trafficking, you know, this is not a hobby horse of mine.
Yeah.
But for people who are obsessed with this, and she's his guest at the State of the Union because she's a victim.
Yeah.
I mean, this is insane territory to me. And which goes to show you how badly this thing has gone awry. And then also, the news of the week was Larry Summers, you know, former Harvard president and other positions. He has to disaffiliate from the university entirely.
Yeah.
And other people are suffering the reputational harms, which Massey and Khanna keep saying, I keep seeing them say on Twitter, are good. This demonstrates we were right to release the files.
Yeah.
They've said that, like, they keep saying, like, who's next? Yeah. It's a very Me Too era, like, we got Harvey Weinstein, who's next kind of thing. Like, Howard Lutnick, he's the Commerce Secretary, he's got ties to Epstein, maybe he'll have to resign. President of the World Economic Forum had to resign. Yeah, we're claiming scalps. Like, okay, but I thought the scalps we would be claiming were people who were pedophiles, first of all.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to release the files, because I was told we'd be identifying abusers of children. These are just people who maintained contact with Epstein, which might be bad and deserving of social sanction, but I would not have supported the government releasing their files on people to just cancel them for non-criminal but unwise behavior. And to bring this back to something many libertarians and that I care about, cancel culture, right? I wrote for years about the process of digging up someone's old tweets that were racist or sexist or whatever they were, and exposing them and then getting them fired or getting them kicked out of college or whatever. And most of us thought that was a kind of a bad thing to do, even if the underlying behavior was itself not good.
Yeah.
It would have been way worse, but it was not. But it's not a libertarian issue that in that case, because it's information that is publicly available or is shared by people.
It's just whether you think this is a good cultural norm.
But
or not.
This, the canceling we're doing as a result of this, where even if you say it's, well, that person deserves it,
it's state enabled cancellation.
It's state enabled,
yeah,
because the government compiled tons of files on this guy, and then all these people incidentally have private information that you would not have gotten except for the government using police powers to apprehend it. And now they're blasting that information out on social media. I mean, that's kind of nuts if you think about it. Like, what if, like, in your personal life, what if you and your coworkers are bitching about your boss or something. My boss is a real asshole or something. Yeah. And you text that to each other.
Yeah.
And then there's an unrelated...
We would never do that.
We worship Catherine. I would only be embarrassed if my text leaked out because...
They were too positive.
It would be too positive. It would be a little shameful how much we revere her and the other leaders of our company. But let's say there's unrelated government investigation of the company, and it's for tax reasons or something, and they seize text messages. Well, they're not supposed to release that because it's not the government is using police powers to enable that. And now they could just release that, and then we'd get fired because we'd said something bad about the boss. Like that's a state enabled cancellation.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I completely understand what you're saying. It's so a couple thoughts that I have. Yeah. So in a way, this is kind of like the cancel culture surveillance version of the pretextual stop, right? The police officer pulls you over for speeding, and then while pulling you over for speeding, notices some other crime, and that's what you actually go to jail for, right? So here we release a bunch of files in order to find corruption and evidence of pedophilic sex trafficking, and instead find
none of which we found, but continue.
We'll hit on that after. Yeah. But instead, in addition, maybe we find a bunch of people maintaining close personal relationships with a very unsavory character,
right?
But I mean, so firstly, the question is like, okay, well, what is to be done, right? So maybe think of the. Why did Tucker Carlson get fired from Fox News? We don't know exactly, but
It is this. It's because there were text messages between him and his producer
that came out as a result of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Right, and so
where he had badmouthed the bosses.
Right, and so once that's public and known, you have to fire him. Right,
right, right.
You can't tolerate that kind of insubordination. And so you know, and obviously some of the people who've had their lost jobs or been fired or whatever as a result of the their connections with Epstein have been unjustly punished. But some of them, like Larry Summers, like they did have kind of skeevy relationships with him. And I don't think the sanctions they're suffering now are unjustified. It's just it's difficult because the means through which this behavior was released was government releasing files that otherwise would not have become public.
If journalists at the Harvard Crimson had done some investigation of Larry Summers and produced this information, that would all be fine.
That would be much less concerning.
It's a little bit different when the government does an investigation and then publishes the results of that investigation
that
using
don't have
powers,
anything to do with the underlying crimes that they're
using
looking
powers
into.
That only the government has. This is going to get even worse with the power they want to have over social media platforms.
Yeah.
Like they're all the time. Police are going to Facebook and Twitter and saying, hey, can we have the DMs for this person for some criminal matter? Like they're seeking, the social media companies want to do peer-to-peer encryption for all messaging services. So they're not in the position where they can even say, we'd love to give you this, but we don't have it. They want to like take us out of the equation. But the government wants the right to basically open your DMs.
Right.
The amount of surveillance and records keeping of our data that the government can now do, wants to do, and is about to do is staggering. And you're going to tell me they're going to do all that, and then if some barely quasi related to you person is a matter of public interest, they're like, all right, we'll just release everything we have on anyone relating to this person.
Particularly now with what we have,
I would think libertarians would be pretty worried about that.
Particularly with the kind of evolution that Trump has, like the next stage of evolution in executive power claiming that Trump has done, where it's like it's beyond this law gives me some vague power to do anything I want. It's like I'm the president. I get to tell the FBI what to do. So they will do whatever I say. That's like my inherent power as the president. So like if they have this information, and now that we've broken that seal on what the government does, who's going to stop the government from just like, oh, this person, I want to find something embarrassing about them in their DMs and I'll release that anonymously.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, totally. No, it's very concerning.
I mean,
if I can say though, just to like, so that, you know, to separate myself from your, pedophilia-philia.
Good.
The tough thing in the Epstein with the release of the Epstein files is that there is a lot of information in there that does reveal aspects of corruption and hints at maybe other sex crimes, I think. That was worth
stuff.
What's that?
You're talking about the pizza
no,
stuff.
No, I'm not talking about the fucking pizza stuff
grape
and the grape
soda. What does that mean?
So stupid. Yeah.
It's stupid. I legitimately don't know what it means and if it's a reference for. I mean, there are many cases.
20 years of email. Someone's going
to. Right.
He mentions grape soda like four times.
Right.
No, but like, I mean, look at Prince Andrew former Prince Andrew over in the UK. Like, because of the release of a lot of Epstein files, he's being charged with corruption, not anything related to sex trafficking, but official corruption.
Right.
There's plenty of other evidence of like Epstein's shady dealings with, other criminals abroad trying to get, you know, government contracts and things like that.
And to be clear, Epstein had sex with underage women, was correctly charged for it, and could have been and was in the process of being correctly charged for it again. I'm not making light of that. No, he was a criminal.
And there is indications in the some of the emails that have come out. He was corresponding with the rich guy who owns the New York Giants, the football team. And the guy, you know, Zoe Lofgren, who's in the hearing with Pam Bondi from a few weeks ago, like she was one of the few Democrats to actually ask like reasonable questions. And she brings up this email the Giants owner guy, I'm forgetting his name, is like asking Epstein, like, oh, is this girl, is she a civilian or is she a pro? Right. And it's like, okay, well, if you know that he is having sex with underage girls that he's paying, and some of his associates are like, is she a prostitute or not? Like, it's not crazy to think that, like, he was participating in more sex crimes with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there is public value to the files that have been released beyond just, like, we found skeevy things about people that otherwise wouldn't have come out. So that's what makes this case difficult. But I completely buy your concern about, like, the government accumulates huge amounts of information on all of us. We are uploading so much more of our own personal dealings online. Possibility for like the US government to do like Soviet style blackmail or whatever.
Compromat,
right?
Well, and Trump himself, they've tried to make him a victim of this. And there was a story this week NPR had that some file that pertained to an accusation against Trump, I guess, didn't get released right away. And on one hand, yes, they passed a law that requires them to release all the files. So if a file that is embarrassing toward Trump was held back, they can't do that. They have to release that file too. I get it. However, it's funny because the accusation therein is clearly false and from a crazy person and references something that could not be true. And, Epstein didn't have a house in South Carolina or wherever it was. Yeah. So it's not true. Yeah. So it's a bit weird that Congress passed a law requiring federal law enforcement to blast onto social media information that they know to be false.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
I'm not like a big misinformation pearl clutcher. That's the word I wanted. But it seems to me reasonable that the government shouldn't deliberately try to
spread false
mislead the public with verifiably false information.
Yeah.
That's not so good. I agree.
Yeah, and it's so unbecoming watching the State of the Union and all these Democrats who did not give a shit about this issue whatsoever until 5 minutes ago are wearing their release the redacted files buttons, and it's just like it's so transparently cynical, particularly if you're making the case that you're being a brave warrior for victims of sex trafficking. To do it in such a cynical and partisan way, you think like if you were an advocate or maybe someone who's experienced some trauma or victimization, like you would be furious at this kind of grandstanding. It just seems so unseemly to me. But this is our politics. You know, everyone's an idiot now.
Yeah. All right. Let's. Well, if anyone's still watching, we'll move on to some non-Epstein related. Oh, you got more to get off your chest.
Well, I wanted to. Yeah. So you read the Richard Hanania thing about like pedophilia is a low IQ concern.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't really buy most of it, but it did make me wonder. It did make me wonder a little bit. His obsession with how elites are smarter than everyone else, right? I was thinking about the most elite of them all, Ayn Rand. We got to ground ourselves in these turbulent times.
Yes.
What do you think her, if she were alive today, she were getting interviewed by Mike Wallace about the Epstein files, like what do you think she would say?
I think she would say this is an anti-Jewish conspiracy.
You think so?
Yeah. She was a big pro-Israel person.
Interesting.
I think she would be very anti-Trump. I do.
Yeah.
Because she hates Russia.
Yeah.
She would have been into the idea that he was stewed for Russia. She'd be like, arm Ukraine to the teeth.
Yeah.
Frankly, the closest like living person that is like Ayn Rand-ish or has what her politics would be in some, not as like her personally, but is Kathy Young.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I expect she would be like a prominent never Trump person. She would be saying She would be writing provocative and almost like annoying columns about how the real Marxist is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Right. Because he's trying to own. He wants to take a stake, ownership stakes, and all these ventures that are. This is the same thing as communism, only worse, even for some reason. Right. That would be where she.
But
land,
so, I think. And so you think the like the she would see the people trying to release the Epstein files as part of some anti-Semitic conspiracy to.
I think that
take down.
Yeah, I think that. I think she'd be like, those people also hate Israel or something.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Interesting. Yeah, her views on what Israel should do to the people in that area pretty spicy.
Yeah, I know what she said about the Native Americans.
So, oh, yeah. If you her view of, like, the land is use it or lose it. Unless you're building railroads on your land, it is not yours. Yeah, that's her theory of property ownership. The first person to build a railroad owns the land, right?
Unless you have proved yourself to be worthy by building monuments to human greatness.
Yes,
you,
unless there is a permanent giant torch burning with the flame of eternal human knowledge and achievement, unless man's triumph over nature and the individual's triumph over the collective is properly depicted through art and music and literature, you do not have a society. We laugh, but I agree with that, basically. I am a kind of a Randian now and think that is basically legitimate.
Very good. Okay, you know what I think? Hmm. You know what I think?
Hmm.
I think she would be both disgusted with Jeffrey Epstein as someone who has basically like failed to like embody human greatness. You know, he's someone who had potential and instead spends it on, you know, rubbing shoulders with corrupt governments and, you know, his...
With the Wesley Mooches.
Yes, exactly. His own...
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, his own sexual gratification. I think she would be turned off by his sexual proclivities, not for, you know, kind of normal person reasons, but because, like, Ayn Rand's whole view of sexuality is that you should be attracted to other... You should be attracted to greatness, right?
Yes.
And so his idea
beautiful people who share your values.
Yes, right. Yeah. The idea that he is then paying 16-year-olds to jack him off would, I think, disgust her.
That would disgust her.
Yeah, in ways that, you know, I mean, it is disgusting, but, you know.
They should be planning how to... They should... Their orgasm of ecstasy should occur as they're planning a futuristic society
the
beyond
last
the reach
railroad
of
ties.
No,
laid.
Honestly,
sure, totally.
That's kind of gross, but yeah.
These
are the questions that are only going to get asked on our show.
Yes.
What would Ayn Rand think about Jeffrey Epstein?
This is why you come here, loyal readers.
Yes.
Then I think she would also
why you leave disgusted. Yeah.
I think she would also be disgusted with the fervor, though, right? Because she's like, these are idiot troglodytes trying to pull down their betters with conspiracy theories.
Yes. She would not be an anti-elite. No,
she would be pro-elite.
Yeah.
She would be she'd be disgusted with the rabble who have made this their cause celeb, but she would be very dismissive of Jeffrey Epstein as maybe someone with potential who has failed to live
up
to
it. Did you ever read, she wrote a column after Marilyn Monroe's death. Did you ever read what she said about
it? Oh, okay.
It was,
I really should.
It's she revered Marilyn Monroe.
Interesting.
And she wrote a column about how this was, it's a very rare example of her putting the blame for something on society at large, saying that Marilyn Monroe did not commit suicide or anything. She was killed by low IQ, hateful, spiteful, jealous people.
Wow.
She said, it's a great line from it. Anyone who has ever hated the good for being better than them has participated in the murder of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
wow. That's her view.
Brutal. Yeah.
Well, and the whole like going to Hanania on, you know,
well, I mean, that's kind of his point in that essay. Yeah. Is like people care about pedophilics. It's like this is my way in which I can feel better than the elite, which I don't completely buy, but no.
I don't buy. I'm the mistake. I think people get strong. The populists go too far. Like elites are all bad and depraved and. Sick. They're all sick fucks. Like that's the populist view, and then the elite view is the common people don't know anything. They're swine. And the reality, I think, is that both are correct.
Yeah, the elites are bad. The people are bad.
The elites are bad, and the people are bad. The elites are depraved.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the people, if they had but an ounce of the power or influence or money that the elites have, would engage in depraved acts of depravity that would make the elites blush.
Yeah.
That's my view.
Yeah.
No one is good at running someone else's life, whether you're an expert or an amateur, is what I would say. That's the I think that's the central observation of libertarianism. We don't want just the people know best, put them in charge. No.
False.
But also the elites are they're our betters, they're smarter, they know. No, false again.
Yeah.
Nobody should be in charge of someone else regardless.
Right.
That's what I think.
And through this, and through the bargaining process of the market that you must have if you have that kind of setup, some rationality emerges, right?
Yes. I mean, but it is, I mean, the point Hanania, I don't know that he even makes this or I didn't quite read it. There's a truth that there's an obsession about like elite sexual abuse or whatever when probably I'm going to guess, take a wild guess that like other categories of crime
are much higher.
It is disproportionately prevalent among low income, non-college educated, is just, you know, is of authority figure, the gym teacher, the priest.
So he doesn't get into that at all.
That's where you do find massive amounts of or significant amounts of child predation is.
So he doesn't get into that and do that point at all in his column. But I mean that is a good point, I think, which is like what is the normal like. Not normal, but what is the like the modal like sexual abuse case is a family member or someone whose job is to be with children, right?
Well, this is what I said when
it's not a billionaire procuring children.
When there was fervor over sexual misconduct on campus, I was like, okay, but a non-college woman has a dramatically more likely chance of being assaulted because because educational attainment and income status and all of those things filter for violent behavior. That doesn't mean the elite, the financial crimes are committed at a higher rate by elite people. Certainly. It's just, you know, we're all kind of bad and we're all kind of good. And it's not, you can't prejudge people by their level of
wealth,
power, and status, I think, which is, in my view, the populist mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, oh, the richer you are, the more depraved you are.
Right.
Yeah. This is an interesting phenomenon, and I don't know exactly why it is, but it's like, so people are interested in murder and sexual abuse for, I mean, it's, you know, people are horrified by it, but also titillated by it.
Right.
Let's be honest. And yet, nevertheless, the focus is always on the rare and sometimes even mythical, you know, fictional examples of this kind of thing. Like, there's plenty of murders that happen. This is America, we, you know, compared to other developed countries, we kill a lot of people. But there's, you know, there's no true crime podcast about the guys who got into an argument at the liquor store or the gangbangers that blow each other up or anything like that, right?
Or just like the domestic abuse.
Right.
I mean, most violence is exactly one of the things you just said. It's garden variety crime, gang type crime, domestic violence, or workplace violence.
That's
I mean, people, the mass shootings, right, get all the tension,
even
trying
though,
to understand and comprehend why did that little psycho walk, you know, buy a gun and go into that school and do that. Let's try to understand this so we can prevent it. You can't understand it. You can't. This is a very unsatisfying. It's difficult to prevent because it's very rare already. Things that are already pretty rare are hard to prevent. But this accounts for like 1.1% of the violence. Yeah. The violence is domestic violence, crime, et cetera.
Right.
And it, you know, disproportionately impacts, again, low-income people. Maybe that's why it's the school shooter thing seems like, that could happen to my kids. That could, you know,
There's a randomness to it that means it weighs heavier on your mind because you don't know when it's going to happen or not. Whereas like gangbangers killing each other, it's like, oh, well, I won't be in a gang and I won't be in that neighborhood.
It's very Joker. It's all part of the plan.
One little mare.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this on Two Way. One of the people at the State of the Union, it was a little girl who'd been in a car accident, hit by, or she was in a vehicle that was hit by an illegal immigrant driver, truck driver. And, you know, it's like, I get it. Like, if you were, you know, if you had your kid run over by an illegal immigrant driver.
Why were they
driver,
here in the first place?
You'd be like, something should be done about this. Get them all out of here. And I'm like, so I get that. And also, if there actually is some problem, are illegal immigrant drivers who don't who are driving trucks and can't read the traffic signs or whatever and got licensed inappropriately responsible for a disproportionate number of crashes? Then that's grounds to do something.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
there's lots of car accidents.
Right. Someone to get it. It's not worse that it happened, really, because yeah. of mm-hmm. the. It could be Bozo the Clown who did it. It wouldn't mean now we got to get rid of all the clowns in the society.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, unless you can show it's actually because of that thing, which maybe you can in this case, but I'm just wary of.
Car accidents are actually kind of the best example of this phenomenon because that's like for a healthy person, otherwise healthy person to die.
It's most likely way.
It's going to be a car accident or maybe a drug overdose.
We have
right?
so many car accidents in the country. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but except for, you know, like insane urbanists on Twitter who are annoying, but also I think sometimes have a point on this issue. No one really cares. We just kind of accept it. In fact, like this was the argument for why you should care less about COVID was like, oh, we have car accidents all the time. No one cares about that.
I bring that out for everything. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you want to regulate chainsaw juggling? Well, did you know how many people die in car crashes this year?
Right. I have a very unpopular position of like we should do more to address car accidents and less to address mass shootings, I guess. So
this is actually a great case for AI. The driverless cars seem by orders of magnitude safer, but somewhere one ran over a cat. And so they don't want to let there be, even though, again, this could save, I'm not being dramatic, this could save thousands of people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think
tens
we,
of thousands,
we hasten.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like 50,000 deaths a year.
Yeah, about 40, deaths, and then many more injuries, right?
Think of all the fear about planes crashing that people had, like the planes, they almost, every now and then one kind of, we had a horrific crash in D.C., not...
Thanks to the government,
It was because the helicopter flew into the plane.
Yeah.
In this very congested air corridor. It seems like, from what I read about it, I read actually a lot about it because it's so horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it was young people coming from some sports competition. And
yeah, they were coming for a figure skating competition.
Everybody,
very sad.
It's just
it was
horrible.
Sad. Yeah, very sad.
It was pilot error, the helicopter.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, I would put it in the category of almost... just reasonable human error because it's frankly hard to see landing where you have to land in DC with you're over the water until the very end. There's lights everywhere and they pack. There's way too much air traffic and just, you know what I mean? They should not do that.
Yeah. They were flying a visual line of sight to whatever the term is, where it's like the helicopter is on a different frequency from the airplane. So they're not talking to each other. Right.
Yeah.
Real sad case. And I mean, with aviation disasters, it's normally like multiple things go wrong. Right. So,
But the bottom line of that is, you know, we're talking about the number of even people killed in a plane crash type thing in the U.S., it's like two digits of people.
Yeah,
like
that was the last. That was the last major.
Before that, there had not been a crash
since 2009. Yeah, the Colgan disaster.
We're not. This is super rare.
Incredibly,
And the car crashes are not rare. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, and so why do you want to build the data centers to power the technology to do the driverless cars to solve this issue?
Yeah, it's frankly one of the most, if you're talking in a utilitarian calculus, how can we stop the most preventable deaths, you would be in favor of building more data centers so we can have more driverless cars quicker.
Yeah, totally,
All right, let's do something fun.
Yeah,
let's
that
move
was a
on.
Dark.
Yeah, we're getting
crashes. And
car crashes and pedophiles and
Cash Patel.
Ugh. Hockey. Yeah, we talked about. Oh no, I don't want to talk about sports again.
You're gonna get nothing from me.
We were playing some cards the other day, you and I.
Euchre. Yes, you were teaching me how to play
Euchre. I taught you how to play Euchre. It's a Michigan or a Midwest at least game that we grew up playing. Great trick taking, taking game. And then I challenged you to chess. And even though you're the big chess guy.
I lost. I made some bad decisions.
You went down.
Okay.
It was the difficulty was we were playing the one we have in the
Lord
office,
of the
which
Rings
is Lord
chess.
Of the Rings chess. With who is Sauron is the king for the black side.
Makes sense.
But Gandalf, not Aragorn, was the king on the white people's side.
No, Aragorn and Arwen were the knights.
Aragorn and Arwen were the knights. And Saruman was the queen equivalent on the black side. So, like, Saruman and Gandalf weren't of same rank.
Right.
Which was very confusing.
And then the pawns for the whites were like shire doors or right. Doors for the baggins.
Yeah, mine was the Tower of Barad-dûr. Yeah.
Which that one made a little more sense, but also like they're not equivalent.
Yeah.
Baggins is not.
And we had about 5 minutes before we had to wrap it up before the State of the Union. So
I don't think it was a fair test of my abilities. Yeah. You'd had a few cocktails to loosen your mind, let the strategic juices flow. I had not. It's not fair.
Not fair. Well, we'll have to try it again.
Yeah.
Maybe with a normal chess set.
So when do you normally play cards, right?
You know, when I'm with people who want to play a game but don't want to play a Robbie game, mm-hmm. by which I mean a complicated European-style board game mm-hmm. where I'm going to have to explain the rules and it's going to take several hours.
Yeah.
Basically,
it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, everyone. Don't worry.
When mom's around. we played a lot of cards in my family growing up. We played a lot of euchre, other things. When my mom comes to visit, we play. Actually, my mom and I like to play. She calls it Canfield, but I actually think that's a different card game. Mm-hmm. It's basically group solitaire. Hmm. You have to have a bunch of card decks. So you're mm-hmm. playing solitaire and everybody's playing solitaire, but you're putting the aces in a common pile mm-hmm. so you can play on other people's, and you're just doing it as fast as possible. And your goal is to get out as many cards.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of like slamming down or watching what other people are playing. It's really fun.
Nice.
We do that a lot.
Yeah. So similar for me, I would say like cards distinct from a board game is something you like schedule to go over and play, right?
Yes.
With the exception of poker, we can maybe talk about that, but like actual like normal card games that don't involve gambling. Yeah, we would. It's a lazy afternoon thing to do if you're hanging out with friends or family, right? We would play on my dad's side of the family. We played a lot of Hearts. I have many memories of playing Hearts in my grandmother's kitchen. Hearts and Spoons. And Spoon. I mean, Spoons.
Oh,
is
I
not
know Spoons. Spoons.
Yeah,
is,
Spoons. Yeah. It's fun. It's good. It's a good game for the kids. Yeah. There's nothing strategic about it.
Yeah.
You want to. That's a good card game. It's like you have a hint of strategy, but it's simple enough that you can, you know, you go around and play and it facilitates banter and conversation. I mean, I think poker is probably the best game, although I don't necessarily really consider it there's a distinction in card games between mm-hmm. a Euchre or a Hearts, which I guess you could bet on, versus like a poker where like you have to bet on it. Like betting is central to it.
Right.
And that I think is kind of like the best game beyond board games. And I mean, chess is different as like a test of strategy, but poker's it's got it all, right? It's got the gambling, it's got the math side of it, like a lot of this comes down to probability, but then it's like how do you apply that probability to the personalities that you're playing, right?
Deceiving people.
Yeah, it's both math and tactics. Yeah, yeah, there's that social kind of deduction to it as well.
I love poker. I don't play that much, and I don't think I'm necessarily
good. You should play
You guys have had a poker night, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm definitely looking for more opportunities to play games with my coworkers. Don't have enough of those yet.
Wow.
Yeah, I really like those mafia style games.
Yeah, those are always fun.
The Secret Hitler type games.
You know, they're fun, but you got to have a good roster of people.
You got to have people who are committed to it and paying attention for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big mafia guy. I actually played mafia online for like 10 or 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing it in the forums of another game I like called Dominion. Dominion is a deck-building card game, kind of like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
It was a real popular game, very fun to play. If you're playing in person, you do tons of shuffling. But there's an online implementation. They actually had several of them, but I played every day. I play probably five games of that almost every day online. Mm-hmm. A lot of the games are quick. Sometimes the game lasts 5 minutes, could last half an hour. It's just one-on-one. Mix of luck and competition, Dominion. There's forums for it that before Twitch, I've been on these forums since like 2012, 2011. And before Twitch was such a big deal and like live streaming playing of games and that kind of video conversation about games was so big, this forum was really a big hub to discuss Dominion and other games. And then we started playing like in the forums, like, hey, does anybody want to play the game Mafia? And so they were playing it in the forums. And so then it's like you have a transcript of the game going the whole time, so it made it very intense because you could like look back, you know, if you're if anybody watching knows these games where somebody gets a couple people are the werewolf or the mafia, right, or whatever it is, or the Nazis, and then everyone else has to figure out who they are and vote them out, and they're slowly killing people off.
Oh, if you have a record though, right? Yeah,
if you have a record, you can go back and remember who voted for what and who did what. You can also get more creative with abilities, like people know from kind of the vanilla game that there's a cop who gets to pick someone and find out what their role is, and there's a doctor who can protect someone from death, but you can get crazier and crazier with the roles.
Oh yeah, like what?
I mean, anything you can dream of. Lovers are real popular, which is when one gets killed, the other also gets killed. Masons are people who have their own private chat while the game is running, so they can discuss as well while, like, in their own private thing that no one else can see. So they can like run a commentary on the game. And sometimes you know that the Masons know that they're both town, and sometimes you don't know their status. And I was in a game where I was in one of those things, and I was a mafia, and I had to delude this person in addition to deluding everyone in the main thread. We've played games where there were people, where there are multiple alignments, where there's two different mafia teams who are not on the same team, and a serial killer who's a mafia person who's just himself and has to be the last man standing, which is very difficult. Not all these people have equal win likelihood. Yeah. What tends to happen if you have multiple enemy factions is they all end up killing each other.
Yeah.
But I was in, I think, I'll get off this in a minute.
I promise. I'm fascinated. But, I don't know if the listeners are, but I am.
I was in a great, and then there's always a theme. The person running it, so, you know, we did Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings. Oftentimes, I don't even know the theme. There was a bunch of Star Trek ones. One of the most famous ones we did was a Star Trek Deep Space Nine themed one, which had both a serial killer and two different mafia factions. It was like the Mirror Universe people or something.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't know Star Trek.
Yeah.
And there were almost everyone had a role. And there was someone, because you could have one-shot roles, one-shot tracker. That means once in the game, that person picks someone during the night phase when people get killed and sees if that person takes a targeting action against someone else. So that could be because that person's the doctor and they're protecting someone. That could be that person's a cop. Yeah. Or it could be that's the mafia executing the kill. I was in an end game. This is always the best when you get down to three people left. I was in an end game where with another town person and a person of the other faction. And I knew by now this is a person of the other faction. It had to be, because I would have already won. Mm-hmm. Because my faction can't win until the other faction's eliminated. Mm-hmm. Once we're half the town, we win. If the other faction's gone and it's just me and some, then I would know I'd won.
Yeah.
But the other person, and I knew who it was because of the way the game had gone, but the other person didn't know. So the town was actually in the town can't win at that point.
Yeah.
And so then I won. Because the town person, I don't think he realized he couldn't win, but like it was that person had to. I'm like, there's no. I was able to present a case where, regardless of my alignment, that person has to be.
Yeah.
So I won the game. I was the last man standing. It was great.
You know, this
fun
is another
things like that.
Oh man, that's crazy. This is another reason not to worry about AI, right? Is because like you can have the best graphics in the world and storylines or whatever, and people still want to play these kind of games, which is just like fucking text chat about trying to, you know,
and
connive and scheme
people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And human, and again, these are people on a screen. I'm playing with people all over the world. I was close with a lot of these people. One of them came to visit me once in DC a long time ago when I lived in DC by myself. He was from Helsinki. Just traveling the world. He's a poker player, actually. Wow. He just traveled the world. He was like, hey, I'm coming to DC. Stay with me for a week. It was great.
Wow.
I went to California. I met one of the other longtime players. Okay. So
whole community out there. Extended universe.
That's why I like social media. Like, it builds community.
Yeah.
Like, I had always wanted to play. I was always organizing this game, Mafia, in college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people wanted to get drunk and go screw each other and not play games. I'm like, we're playing games tonight, goddammit.
That's gay, yeah.
I know. Games, like, gay to love games. But then online, I was able to organize these games constantly. Yeah. Like, it connects people.
You can elect into a
community I wanted to be a part of.
Right, absolutely. And because
autistic people.
Yeah, your potential community is everyone across the globe. Yeah. People can better select for types of communities they want to be in. Yeah, that's true. I think that is a real positive for tech.
Yeah.
I'm generally down on social media, but I don't deny its benefits.
Yeah. So. And the only reason I mostly stopped...
These are also like forum type things, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. The only reason I stopped, I was still playing every now and then. You know, I would take a year, I would get sick of it, then you come back to it. I haven't played a game in about 2 years, only because our Dungeons and Dragons stuff has gotten a lot more involved, and I'm running two different groups, so that it kind of scratches the same itch.
Yeah.
So I didn't have enough time to give to it because I'm just playing other games.
You sound like an alcoholic. I haven't played a game of Dominion in two years.
Well, that's not true. Yeah. Mafia, yes. Dominion, right, no. Sorry. I played five sorry. Games every day.
Mafia, very good.
Games are good. I like Agricola, if you've ever played that
game.
That's
like farming. It's about farming.
Farming yeah. game. But that people, when you say that, they think you're talking about like Farmville or whatever on your phone. No, it's a serious, it's a resource management game. But then when you say that, they think you mean Catan, which is not at all what it is. Yeah. There's no trading, and there's no, other than, I guess, the cards you begin with, there is no luck in the game, really. Like there's no dice rolling, there's no luck based mechanic.
It's like
there's a bunch of common resources, and then you have to decide like, oh, I could take wood, or I could take stone, or I could take reed. But if nobody takes wood, then next round there will be twice as much wood. And also, one of the things you can do is elect to become the starting player next time. So it's like, I could take one reed now, or I could take starting player, and maybe I'll get two reed next time. But what if somebody else is going to take reed? So much fun.
Yeah,
it's
a lot of fun.
It's a barrel of laughs.
I play a barrel of monkeys. That's why I like to play.
Isn't that the one where the monkeys scoop?
Yeah, you got to hook the one monkey to the other monkey. There's a whole community
about
it.
You and the other 13-year-olds.
I have Finnish people coming to visit me to play barrel of monkeys.
Yeah.
No, I've been off it for a few weeks. It's tough, but
Well. Yeah, game's good.
What else we got on?
What else we got? Night of the Seven Kingdoms ending. Did you see it? It was great.
I did.
It was great.
This is an excellent show. Yeah.
It was really
good. You got some good, warm, fuzzy, fun adventure feelings, right? This is something media doesn't do too well, I think, these days, is bring back to like Star Trek Next Generation. Just like good action adventure. You know, a Star Trek episode, an episode like Monster of the Week episode from X-Files or something. Setup, payoff of a bit of adventure, right? Not these long, slog, multi-season arcs through endless nihilism. Night of the Seven Kingdoms, very well done.
My heartstrings a little bit. It made you feel something. The his relationship to the old man, the dead knight, who was just kind of appears in flashbacks throughout the whole thing, made you feel something. And how the last shot is, he imagines him there, the old man who's died, and he like rides off into the tall grass in a different direction.
Yeah.
It had a cinematic quality to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's little things like that that make you feel something.
Well, so that would actually probably be my one criticism.
Oh, you didn't like the music while they played that?
No, I thought that was completely fine.
Okay.
I thought that was funny. I didn't hate that at all. No, you said it had a cinematic quality to it. This obviously should have just been a movie.
Especially because it was 6 30-minute episodes, so it actually quite easily could have been a movie.
Right. So what's that, 3 hours? Yeah. Right? Yeah, but I mean, also there's much trimming that could have been done. I don't even mean like delete a scene. Just like there was a lot of shots in the show where it's like the character is just staring at the camera for 10 seconds, right? They're definitely padding the runtime there a little bit. So.
I loved that it didn't tell you. Even with a revelation of sorts in this last episode, sort of hinting at something that had been suggested, that Sir Duncan, the main character, has never actually been made a knight.
Because
the old man, it seemed, if you were paying attention, that the old man had actually died before making him a knight.
Yeah.
And then we kind of see this flashback of him say, why'd you never make me a knight? And then it seems like the old man's already dead. Then it also sees him wake up.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, if this was a stupid, like, Stranger Things show for Gen Z, made the way streaming, where, it has to state the theme over and over again, he would have said directly to another character, you know, my thing is, I was never actually made a knight. I wanted to be made a knight, but I wasn't made a knight. I was made a knight, even though I wanted to be a knight.
Yeah.
And then another character 5 minutes later would say, that's Sir Duncan. He wanted to be made a knight, but he was never actually made a knight.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
Make me pay attention.
Right. Yeah.
Make me fucking rewind it.
It should be
if
worth
I
my
didn't
time.
Get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%. Absolutely.
And I loved that it just hinted at it and left you to make that conclusion, but also left some ambiguity.
Right. I mean, that's where all style comes from, is like a little bit of subterfuge and you, the audience, just being carried along with what the characters are doing. Otherwise, all media should just be a Wikipedia page explaining to you what happens.
Right? I love ambiguity. I love when things are open for interpretation. You know, we, like we talk about Sopranos all the time. Mm-hmm. Like it's great. I love that end. I love that you don't really know. And you can
the characters misremember things, and
you can certainly
everyone is lying all the time.
Say that maybe Tony got killed, and that's what happens in that final thing, or maybe he just maybe that last scene is he's gonna have to be looking over his shoulder. The best case scenario for him, he's gonna be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life, and it you can really interpret it in multiple ways,
right?
I miss that. That is being lost in the things that are popular these days.
Yeah, because you get a chance to use your brain and you have the social aspect of the media as well. You get to chew over it and discuss it, right?
You tell me what you took away from it and what you thought about it and what it suggested to you. And I say it and it's...
And we can argue and get mad and shout.
And spit at each other.
Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. Absolutely. Instead of just, so much modern Gen Z two screen media, as they call it, is just made for you to be a clapping seal, right?
I liked also Night of Seven Kingdoms. Also, the it takes place in between the two series. The House of the Dragon takes place way before it. Yeah. Game of Thrones takes place way after it. I think most people understand that, like, the little kid is a ancestor of Daenerys Targaryen, of the Targaryens in the main Game of Thrones show.
Ooh, that was such a good scene where his hair is starting to grow back.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
And what does he do right after that? He goes to seek his vengeance and then, of course, crumples and,
And again, he doesn't say, I'm going to seek my vengeance on my hated brother. And his dad doesn't say, I want you to stop seeking your vengeance on your hated brother.
Your brain's got to do a little bit of work.
Touching scene.
Brain's got to do a little
where
work.
He kind of hugs and stops him and it's nice. But its position begins to show you the Targaryens are now, they're in charge during this show, the dragon-riding family. But they don't have any dragons anymore. And the resentment of the people toward them is kind of building. Like, one of the characters says, like, these people are aliens.
Yeah,
they're incestuous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're half of them are insane.
Right.
And we hate them. And because obviously in the Game of Thrones present day series, the main series, the Targaryens have been overthrown in recent memory.
Right.
And it's nice to see the seeds building against these people who look freakishly different than everyone else because they're conquerors from a distant world.
Yeah. The bleach blonde hair, the dark black, uniforms that they're wearing, not quite uniforms, but clothing that they're wearing. Yeah. And you notice that, because what the plot of the whole show is actually kind of started by them feeling insecure about their own position, right? Yeah. Because why does the one Targaryen, the douchey one, what's his name?
In this show?
Yeah.
Arian.
Yeah. Why does he, like, start beating up that woman? Because she kills the dragon,
she's mocking
right?
a dragon.
And, you watch, I don't know how conscious this was, but you watch the first House of the Dragon series. They're making fun of dragons all the time, right? But, like, the rulers have the dragons, so they don't give a shit what the
people
say.
Also, the dragons are just stepping on people constantly.
Right,
And House Targaryen doesn't care and no one can do anything.
Right. But in this show, they're like, oh, wow, they're making fun of us. They might do something.
In this show, the resentment is building.
The simmering nationalism of the Westerosi is really cool.
Who are these people? These
to tell
blonde haired, purple eyed invaders.
Right. Because the Baratheon guy has a line too in the last episode. Yeah. Obviously, one of his ancestors is going to overthrow the Targaryens.
Yep. But
I really like that aspect too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a solid show. Mm-hmm. We were talking about Black Mirror. We were pre doing the show yesterday.
Right.
So we were having a good banter about Black Mirror, which we're both fans of.
Yeah, I watched during my travels. I was in an Airbnb with Netflix, and I don't have Netflix myself. Mm. And so I was
picture
watching...
you kind of living in like an abandoned lighthouse, maybe.
Yeah, right. I can't say anymore, but no, I was on land. I was on land.
Okay.
No giant light bulbs for me. But I watched some of the most recent season of Black Mirror, which I had not seen, and I liked it. It was good.
I've only seen from the most recent season. I've seen all of them except the most recent season, and I did see The one where it's kind of like, again, it's a true crime murder thing where his family is the murderer or whatever.
Okay. Well, I didn't watch that one. Oh, I guess now I won't. Okay. no, all, I watched I watched the sequel to the Star Trek episode they did.
Oh, right. I didn't see it. But the Callister one, the original I loved. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. And so they do a fallout of that episode, basically, where they're trying to get back into the real world. Or, you know, they're being tortured in this video game still, right? And it's just like, it's, I don't know, it hits all the notes of what a Black Mirror episode should do well, which is like a kind of conventional sci-fi plot with some modern adaptations where it's like the cookies in the game are so stressed because the game designers are constantly requiring people to like spend money to buy credits to like get things for their ship or armor or weapons. And because they live in the game, they don't have actual money, right? And so instead they have to go around being like, you know, like basically bandits robbing people to like get their credits. So I thought that was pretty inventive and cool. And yeah, so I don't know. It was solid. Yeah.
Too many Black Mirror episodes are too depressing and anti-technology for me. Like many of them are just paranoid about technology. It's like Jonathan Haidt is producing the series or something.
Right.
That like, oh no, yo, you thought this would be good? Well, let's take it to some
disgusting, horrible,
extremely horrifying place. I think I like the ones almost universally better that have some happy ending, including the Miley Cyrus one, which is my favorite. The Hang the DJ, the dating app simulation one, I think is very cute.
I really like Nosedive, the one where the woman is obsessed with her social media score and then, you know, ends in disaster and eventually, but she ends up not caring, right?
Yeah. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I like the positive spin too. It does get a little tiresome and it's a, you can tell it's a product of a sick, sick mind. Or it's like, you know, a lot of these characters, it's like, I don't know, there's, because you've written fiction, right?
I'm almost done.
Awesome.
This weekend, I think I'll complete the draft of my novel I've been working on.
Awesome. But there's something like you feel a certain connection, relationship with your characters, right? So it's kind of like up to you. It's like, do I want to be mean to this character by making them do a bad thing, right? Do I want to be mean to this character by having a bad thing happen to them? In Black Mirror, like...
They always say yes.
They always say yes. I want to be mean to this character by them meeting some horrible end, or I want to be mean to the character by having them be worse than they necessarily need to be. Like, that's actually, like, that's something... I like the USS Callister episode, the first one, where Jesse Plemons plays a computer programmer who, in his own private world, is kind of torturing people who annoy him in the real world.
Right.
And it's a very... I feel a little... bad for the character that he is so bad because he's being made fun of in the real world and then he gets his jollies by torturing people in his own private one. And they kind of do the same thing in the sequel as well, where it's like there's like a digital version of him and he's put upon but then also kind of a you know, still a bad guy. And so it's like, it's just kind of mean, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of people ending up in bad situations who had no agency over what happened to it, which I usually find narratively irritating.
Yes.
If it's just like there's that video game one, which I don't like, where he gets like a brain aneurysm and dies and it's just happening in his head. And like, okay, what's the point then?
Yeah.
This just happened in his head and nothing he could have done would have stopped this. And
so the point of this episode was to me watch this character just get tortured and die. Great. Right. Yeah. Why don't I just watch the Human Centipede or whatever, right? Yeah, yeah. It's that one playtest, I believe, is the episode.
It bothered me for that reason.
Yeah, it had two things that I really hate in media. So firstly, as you mentioned, like protagonist has no agency and just gets tortured all the time. No point. It's not even really a plot. And then number two, it's all in their head. I hate that reveal.
Hate.
It's never a good reveal.
Hate.
No one likes that. Stupid. Bad.
Except in White Christmas, which is a good episode. And that one is a little bit relentlessly bleak, but is just very clever
and well done.
How it sets up the situation.
Interwoven stories and characters.
Two guys at an abandoned lighthouse or some Arctic outpost.
Doesn't really make any sense why they're there.
Right, and then they realize they don't even know why they're there, and it's like a police interrogation
thing. John Hamm plays one of the characters.
Yeah, he's really good in it. But you said when we were talking about this, and I totally agree, that like the punishment of the guy is just so wildly disproportionate to the harm he did. I mean,
he
was justifiably angry at his wife or romantic partner or whatever who wanted to have an abortion without telling him.
Right.
And then his actions cause her awful father to get killed or something.
Yeah.
And so that is obviously a crime, but then his punishment is to spend an
eternity,
from his perspective, time in torture.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. I mean, I guess that is kind of the theme, thesis, takeaway from all of Black Mirror is that by technology dominating more of our lives, it enables people to fuck with and torture others, right? I mean, that's why, like, I mean, I think the best criticism of the show, even the good episodes, is that, like, every conceit is basically, what if your brain was a computer, you know? And you're uploaded into some environment where you have no control over it.
I think
but not every episode is like that.
No.
Although very few ever have any sort of even when the episodes have happy endings, the tech is never really redeemable, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say in Hang the DJ, that's the dating app one.
That's true. Yeah.
Maybe that one does.
Yeah.
I really like that one. I think it's very cute.
Yeah.
San Junipero, the one everybody really likes. I like that one too.
Okay.
That one doesn't indict tech really in any way. It actually has a kind of vision of how tech could, in a positive way, extend or expand our
They create an afterlife, right?
Yeah.
A heaven, if you will. Yeah. I mean, I guess those are kind of like, those are actually two interesting episodes to see contrasted, which is like San Junipero, which is about technology creating a heaven, and then White Christmas, which is about technology creating a hell.
Very much so.
Punished eternally for their crimes. Yeah.
That's smart.
Not just for hats, even though I am wearing a hat.
you said a minute ago, you know, when you're writing fiction and like, you know, trying to decide what happens to people, I almost feel like I'm never really the decision maker on what happens to characters I'm writing about. It's like, it's right one way. It's almost like it already happened.
Mm.
And what the work is me trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Like I can't, I'll think at, like I have a, let's say I have a character who dies or I think this character gets killed this way. And then I have to think about it and go, do they really? And I think about it and I think about it and I consider it. But it's not like I'm choosing whether it's like it's right one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're fitting in a puzzle piece and it just doesn't fit correctly.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one correct way for it to fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I might get that wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like I'm picking which way the puzzle piece fits in. There's a mm-hmm. natural correct way. Stephen King said this about stories in his book on writing. And I totally agree with this. And this is how I conceptualize storytelling. He thinks of them as little treasure boxes buried in the sand on the beach, and he's just unburying them.
Mm.
They're already, it already exists in its correct format. He's just trying to unbury it.
Michelangelo with the marble statues. They're already there in the marble.
It's very much like that.
Interesting.
Which is why I find it so fascinating when I'll read then about like Tolkien's process for writing Lord of the Rings, which was to just very little idea what was going to happen. He would just start writing. I think he like wrote the first part, couple chapters of Fellowship of the Ring over and over again because he'd write it up to Elrond, up to Rivendell, and then he'd throw it out and just do it again.
No.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, so I've spent much less time writing. I mean, you have a whole novel. I've spent much less time writing fiction. I just write short stories, right? So that's a little different because it's like, and maybe this is a little bit of like weakness of something I need to practice, but like with short stories, you're focused, I think, a little less on like character arc, right? And more on like setup payoff of a plot point.
There's some feeling you want to communicate in a short
story. Yeah, exactly.
They're great. I find them so hard to write because I immediately start going, I want to do world building for everything. I want to go, well, what is... By the time that I'm getting the story, I've had to describe what everything looks like and what everything. It's hard for me to just jump into something.
Well, so and
then pull out.
Actually, something that, like
we've accomplished our point.
Yeah. Well, you gotta, you know, if you go back and read like a lot of Isaac Asimov stuff, it's like he really doesn't spend a lot of time on description or. I mean, through the process of writing endless novels and short stories set in one universe, you get some world building, but like he doesn't dwell a lot on it in the way that like a George R. R. Martin would at all, right? So that actually is something that like gave me a little bit of confidence to do it. But like, no, short stories, you have to approach it like a longer journalism article, right? Mm-hmm. You start with a lead that kind of tells you everything about what you're doing and why you should be interested. And then you kind of know your kicker of like, and here's the kind of like setup, payoff, the punchline that I want. And then everything else just kind of like is structural. You just fill it in. Yeah.
I always have to remind myself that when I feel like I've done a bad job describing, because I have them so clear in my head, like what a character looks like. And I feel like I've done a bad job describing. It's so hard. You have to describe, my creative writing professor said this in college, you have to describe people's faces. Try to describe people's faces.
That's very hard. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I've done a bad job of it. And then you think about all the fiction you like, whereas your picture of what the character looks like is just unique to you. It's not because it was described that way. Right. And then when they're portrayed in an adaptation, they look different. And you're like, oh, I didn't picture that at all because, you know.
Right.
Because.
Yeah. Every great novel where you read about the character with the ruddy face and the creased forehead. It's like, what the fuck does that look like?
George R. R. Martin is actually really good at that. He's really good at describing the way characters look quickly and memorable, and he has so many characters. Mm-hmm. He's good at that. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
What else we got on our list?
Do we have any other serious topics? Do we have to. Isn't it great?
We did some serious stuff.
I guess we started serious. Yeah.
I don't have any other serious topics.
All right, hit me with here. What do you got?
You know what I'm really wondering right now?
What's that?
Whether there's still any cold pizza in the fridge from our State of the Union pizza party we had.
It's Friday. State of the Union was on Tuesday. Is that... I was wondering this myself.
It's just bread with sauce and cheese on it, and it's been in the fridge.
You think it'll be okay?
I don't know. Tuesday to Friday, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I love cold pizza. I thought maybe we can... Yeah, you know, one more dance around the barn.
One more ride, one more payday. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the in-kind benefits.
Because I was rushing here, even though I was 12 minutes late, I was basically on time. So I didn't have time to pack a lunch. So
yeah, I didn't either. And we're lucky because the only pizza left is all vegetable pizza, and it's Lent and it's Friday. So, but that's
what's left. Yeah. The meat lovers went first.
Yeah,
pepperoni. People there was loved a spicy one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there was something with olives.
Yeah,
yeah. I love cold pizza. It reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah,
reminds me of being a kid going out on the lake in family friend's boat, Lake St. Clair. Do you know Lake St. Clair?
I don't.
So there's the Great Lakes. You might have heard of those. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, you're Mr. Worldle. You're the world's foremost geography expert.
So but I'm not from the Midwest. You're intimately familiar with the Great Lakes.
I only grasp
their greatness in the abstract.
Their greatness is very real to me. There's a little lake, Lake St. Clair, that we lived very, very near to. And it's a beautiful lake. It's mostly just like 10 or 15 feet deep. And you can kind of see Canada on the other side, but it's big. It's not as big as the Great Lakes, but it's big. And we would go out on the boat, catch fish, bring them home, cook them, eat them.
Huh.
And we'd have cold pizza on the boat.
So you're there looking at Canada. You think to yourself, I could kill myself if I wanted to, but I'm feeling so good on the lake, I don't actually want to.
I could go there, beat their hockey team at whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man, I wonder how many of the Canadian hockey team is going to sign up for Maid or whatever.
That's the kill yourself thing in Canada. Yeah, it is pretty, and I support, you might think it's wrong for religious reasons. I mean, I don't think it's good, obviously, you know, killing yourself, but it can't really be illegal because... It's you can't just, there's no way to enforce. I mean, you can enforce helping someone else do it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you can't really prevent it legally. This is my view, right?
Yeah, this is, I can feel conflicted about this as well. So it's like, you know, something like, libertarians are divided on abortion. I'm very opposed to abortion.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it being illegal.
Yeah.
But that's because
mitigating harms to another entity.
If you're pro-life, you see that as mitigating harms to another person.
Whereas, I think there is reasonable disagree. It's a difficult situation because of the rights conflict there is hard to adjudicate.
Yeah, whereas in euthanasia, it's an adult voluntarily opting to kill themselves with some help of someone else, right? And I don't know if that's – so it's like if – some person wants to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, A, it's kind of a legal nonsense because if they do it, there's no punishment.
Right.
So there can be no legal deterrence.
Right.
But also it's they're electing to do it. So I don't know if there should be a law against it as well.
Right.
But then the question becomes, can you aid or facilitate someone doing this to themselves? And I think it's actually kind of similar to doing like trans surgeries, mm-hmm. Let's just say for children to make it a little less controversial, mm-hmm. or it's like, should you be like, okay, the person can opt to do it, but can you involve yourself voluntarily in harming mm-hmm. another, right? Because mm-hmm. if you can't, then like, why don't we just legalize gladiatorial fights or whatever? Mm-hmm. And some libertarians would maybe say, yeah, go for it, do that. But I don't know.
I'm for it, but what Canada and some of the European countries is concerning, because it seems, and I guess maybe people will say I'm misjudging it or not describing it accurately, but it sure seems like they're not just making it an option for people who are terminally ill or are in horrible physical pain, where I do think it should be an option. I don't think being alive with like extremely low quality of life and extreme pain is necessarily something you should be. I mean, I don't have the religious perspective on this, so it's not necessarily something you are obligated to choose for yourself. But it seems like it's being recommended to people who are having who have a mental distress that is,
yeah,
should be addressed other ways.
Right. You think people, the medical establishment should be there to help people, not kill right. them.
Life is itself precious.
Right.
So an end of, crippling physical pain or something. Like, I don't know. I read some awful story about, some mountain climbing person, loves mountain climbing. One day he fell off the mountain, has broken everything. He can't move a muscle. He will just be a vegetable. And he wants to seek out means to end his life. And yeah. Am I going to stop that? No. Absolutely not. But this seems like it's being recommended to people who are sad, who are depressed.
Or just sick and expensive to your monopolized government healthcare system, mm-hmm. right? Because this is a lot of stories that come out of Canada. Someone has cancer and they say, oh, well, it's going to be like 2 years before we can get you in to see a doctor, but would you like to kill yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. That's not literal direct coercion, I guess, but it's a soft form of coercion because the government is the government monopoly is doing what's good for the government monopoly, which in this case means encouraging people to kill themselves instead of providing them with healthcare, right? There was a case. I'm referencing a case of a woman in I think it was Vancouver, who had cancer. The Canadian government, their nationalized healthcare service was not going to treat it. They recommended MAID for her instead. She comes to the United States, gets treatment, and is alive today.
Okay, that's crazy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the position you put yourselves in, right?
Yeah, I was thinking initially, like, if you have cancer and you're, weird to say, otherwise healthy, but like old people who have like a lot of ailments, who have an extremely low quality of life and a life expectancy of a short amount of time, whose care is extremely expensive. Does that sound very heartless? That is bankrupting our medical. We can keep people alive so much. You were old, you were still sick, you were sick, you died in your sleep one night.
I think
now it goes on and on and on and on and on because we can technically. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying. I think there's a very
without being cruel to those people, don't want it even.
I think there's a very serious, because I mean in a way that is a form of abuse as well. I think there's a distinction to be made between deciding that it's someone should, someone is going to die. We're going to embrace a natural death here versus I'm going to actively kill you, right? Because if someone is in that situation, you wouldn't need to shoot them full of, some drug to kill them.
Right. I've known old people who are like, please, dear Lord, take me. I'm ready to go. I've had a good life. It's over. Please. But, and the end is so medicalized because there's so much they can do for a couple more months or even a couple more years. And it's very undignified, I think.
Yeah. Well,
involves a lot of hospitals.
And
lot
the hospitals exploiting people who are about to die anyway.
Yeah.
And the taxpayers in the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an abuse there as well. Yeah, I think this is something that...
Like, if I was staring down, if people were going to help me use the bathroom and I was going to go, you know, I'm going to be wetting myself every night for the next 2 years and I was in pain and I was 95 and that's... I would want to just... I would not want to go through that, I think.
I think this is
maybe that's just me.
Again, I'm opposed to assisted suicide and everything like that, but... I think in part because we've lost the art of dying well, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, we've medicalized it and now it's in, you know, to the...
You should have to take a sword and... Is that what you're saying?
Through the heart. No, not like that. Not like dying like a, you know, failed Roman coup plotter.
Yeah,
but,
I was going a little Japanese with it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Now you're really going to get us canceled.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's those final moments. That's time to try to reconcile yourself with the life to come, right? Mm-hmm. And as opposed to just like that kind of utilitarian, I'm just going to try to minimize pain as much as possible. But mm-hmm. I'm also not like a person on my deathbed, so maybe I would hope I wouldn't feel differently. But
right,
let me say, like, the story of the mountain climber who is paralyzed and they are just going to be, you know, in a Stephen Hawking's like wheelchair for the rest of their lives, like. That's how I can understand why someone in that situation would want to kill themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what he's in that, so he had written, he didn't write, he dictated an essay to someone about this.
Yeah.
And what he was saying is like, even that knowing I have this option is makes life easier.
Hmm.
Just knowing I could, if this became too overwhelming, go through with that mm-hmm. makes this easier. Yeah. Yeah. Grim stuff.
Grim.
But I think, again, with the older people, because we were, I mean, COVID, you know? We were all held back as a society on the kind of thinking that we can't put anyone at risk for this. Like, I remember, like, you know, my grandparents saying, oh my, so you're saying, you know, they're very old. You're saying the last 5 years of our lives, we're going to just be shut in our house and never see another human being again. And never say, we would rather take, seriously, we would take some risk to see our family members.
Right, yeah.
To see our friends.
Yeah, completely.
And if. We will take that risk because we're at the end of our lives. And what are we waiting for?
Right.
And yet they understand that would comes at their age with some degree of risk given the presence of the disease. But it would not be unreasonable to, despite that risk, say, at this end of my life, I want some enjoy. We can always elevate safety to an even higher goal at a cost of our happiness and enjoyment.
Yes, yeah, but I mean that can be true while you can also oppose, you know, assisted suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's like you hold in your mind two things, which is that like the point of life is not to just maximize the amount of minutes that you spend alive,
literally alive,
and then also a belief that you don't at any point just become disposable.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's
well, that's why I hate the idea of the depressed people, otherwise healthy people. Not, I'm not saying mental illness is made up, but should be treated. Mental illness is not made up and can be treated through medicine mm-hmm. and should not be like, well, try killing yourself.
Yeah.
That seems very, very wrong and seems mm-hmm. to be like what our northerly neighbors are increasingly interested in.
Ross Douthat had a good line. He has so many, but he's like, they say, you know, success is getting to Denmark, but really it means getting to Canada. Yeah. It's like getting to Denmark is, I think it's a Fukuyama, just like this idea that like, oh, you know, the end all of human progress is a nice little Scandinavian welfare state. But it's funny because you get
60% tax rate.
Yeah, you get there and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we've perfected society. Let's all kill ourselves.
Man, do they have taxes.
It's out of control.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Outrageous, yeah.
Are they the ones that are 60%? I was, for some reason, looking at tax rates.
Yeah.
Them. They're 60%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The majority of your income.
I'm sure that's, I think that's marginal. So it's like 60% after a certain bracket. But
Then why,
but you're probably,
why
your,
work?
Your overall tax burden is probably around like 50% or whatever, right? Yeah, well, that's why they take like 6 months of vacation. It's because, like, what is the fucking point of working?
They get, someone said, they get, like, I don't know if it's them or one of these other countries. I think it's 49 weeks of paid leave for having a child.
Yeah,
you
so it's like
you
a whole
have a child
year.
And don't work for a year? A
whole year, right. Yeah, and then people, like, if you're, like, productive and, like, I want to go back to work, then, like, people, like, look at you side-eyed. It's like, when you come back, like, oh, you're not taking care of your child? Yeah.
Okay, that's why... We're America.
America rocks, right?
America is pretty great.
America is the best country in the world and always will be.
We want you to work.
Yeah.
We can talk about problems we have or whatever, but you gotta work, and we want to build things We want to be rich.
Yeah.
We want to be prosperous. And that is good.
Not to bring up sports, but I was hanging out with some libs because, you know, I was hiding in a blue state. And so I was hanging out with some libs. And they were talking about how, like, it's hard to, you know, support America and the Olympics because of Trump. And she's like, come on. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that is so foreign to me. I mean, I can understand not caring about the Olympics because I mostly don't care.
Yeah.
But that's cool when we won.
To want to watch it, but then to be
can't
mad?
Because of Trump?
Yeah.
Like, Trump is not synonymous. Well, that's the same mistake the most ardent MAGA people make, that Trump is synonymous with the nation itself.
False.
That he's the head of the Trump dynasty and the U.S. cannot be separated from that. This is not true.
I could maybe see it if it was like, you know, the Iraq war, where it's like, okay, America's kind of going around the world fucking everything up. And then it's a little embarrassing to be like, oh, yeah, those are our guys. But Trump's just like, I mean, I don't like Trump at all. I'm alarmed by many of the things he does. But he's fucking up America, right? So it's all good.
And I'm sorry, and I want to beat China at things.
Yeah,
China is really
bad. They're the bad guys. They are the real bad guys. Yeah.
We now have... There are good, like, you know, I used to, I guess, have more sympathy for, like, leftist perspectives on, like, we're complicit in, we've done these abuses.
What's okay. What Trump say to Bill O'Reilly? You don't think we've killed people?
A lot of killers, Bill. Right. And it's useful to keep that in mind. But in today's day, no, U.S. good, China bad, Russia bad.
We're building the next generation of human freedom here. They're building some techno-totalitarian genocide state.
Yes, yeah. They are very bad, and we can be proud that we're not them. Maybe ask some of their athletes how they feel about the Uyghur. You know, our athletes are always asked by journalists at these things. What do you think about what Trump's doing? What are they supposed to? And because we have free speech, they can say whatever they want, and Trump gets mad about it. But nobody ever asked those athletes what they think. And they shouldn't, because they'll be shot.
Right.
But maybe just ask them about sports then.
Yeah.
We just won't even bring it up.
Right.
Stick to sports.
Stick to sports. We will not stick to sports.
No. We're done with sports. Yeah. I think we're done with this episode too. You got anything else on your mind?
Just real quick, I'd just say I do not look forward to our coming war with Iran, but I just wanted to get that in there real quick.
And I've done a lot of criticism of I hate having to criticize Thomas Massie because I agree with him on 99% of things. He's my favorite member of Congress. I just really disagree with him on the Epstein crusade. But him and O'Connor demanding a vote on this. No Democrats or Republicans want to take a vote on this because they don't care to do their jobs. Only those two people say we should vote on whether we go to war with Iran.
Yep. Very good.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for watching. See you later.